Okay, Amy, so I'll have to admit, as I think back to our interview with Meg, which was amazing and powerful, and we learned so much,
Yes.
but I'm a little bit, I don't know if embarrassed is quite the right word, but you and I did a lot of fangirling over her and her the vocabulary that she introduced us to. Like, why are we so enamored by learning new words? What is up with us?
Well, it really is true. I love a good word, and I think I've told on the podcast that I have gotten accused of using words to try to seem smart, and that is really not it. I just love a word that is precise. You know, I love it. I've never met an SAT word that I didn't love.
No, I need to pause for a moment and say that I didn't know if our friendship could actually deepen, but I just feel like it went to a whole new level. I never met an SAT word I didn't love. Oh my goodness. Are you sure we're not sisters separated by, a few months and
See,
some genetics?
this is our affinity for each other for sure, a big part of it. And so I got a new car in January, I didn't tell you.
Oh, my goodness, you've been holding out on me.
It's a convertible.
You got a convertible in January and you didn't tell me.
Those weird things, you don't talk about your new car, but it replaced my 14, and it's a new to me car, but it replaced my 14-year-old car. But I've never had a vanity plate before because they're vanity plates.
And what kind of Jesus girl would have a vanity plate?
Not just a convertible, it's a red convertible. So it just screams for a vanity plate. It's gotta have a vanity plate. So guess what my vanity plate says?
Do tell.
It says word girl on it.
Excited.
And there were these guys down at the beach this summer. They were like, "What does that mean?" And I said, "Well, it has layers. Like, I do love all kinds of words. I have a lot of words to speak. I'm an author. I love scripture, and I have never met an SAT word that I didn't love."
Okay, now I can just hear our listeners. I'm listening. They are begging for a picture of Amy by her red convertible with a view of her amazing vanity plate that says Word Girl. Because you've been
Okay.
holding out on all of us for like
I
10 months
know.
here.
I don't
Oh
know.
my goodness.
I'm kind of embarrassed that I indulged so much to get a red convertible. But the college tuition is paid. So anyway, Barry kind of spoiled me.
You
That's
know,
the
if you
bottom
feel the
line.
need to justify, we'll sit and listen. But Amy, you are allowed to own a
Or
red
you can
convertible.
just go for a ride with me. That's what
Yes.
has to happen. Yes. So why do you love words, Sherry?
Oh my goodness. Well, there is the saying among those of us who put pen to paper or fingers to keyboard keys that we don't know what we think until we write about it. And so words are just, to me, words, and especially when I'm writing, is just another form of prayer. And it's where God meets me and helps me. It helps reveal things to me and convict me and convict me and convict me.
Yes.
And so then I come on this podcast and share the misery. I mean, share God's blessings with you and with our listeners. But really, it does come down to if I can name it, I can tame it. Like it is the thing that I cannot wrap words around that ends up in many ways being so scary that I avoid it or I run from it or I just don't understand it. Just a few days ago, I had an experience where I was sharing a struggle with somebody and they were like, "Oh, I'm so sorry that happens to you." And I was like, "Oh, okay, clearly it doesn't happen to you, so it must not be normal," which made me feel even worse. As I processed it, I was able to realize that what I had been describing to them was derailment. It was being derailed when I'm literally on track and moving forward, and I get derailed, and then I have to figure out how to get back on track. And we'll be talking about this in future episodes, don't worry. But my point is figuring out the term for it, because I was like, is it being blindsided? No. Is it being overwhelmed? No. It's being derailed. And when I could nail it down to that term, I'm like, if I can name it, I can tame it. So now I am my very own personal experiment of, okay, when am I being derailed? How do I respond to being derailed? How can I seek guidance from God's word? Not for this nebulous thing of, oh, woe is me. I'm not getting enough done today. I feel so at loose ends. I feel so overwhelmed. I love being able to bring it down to a term that I can focus in on. And then really, it just, I feel like I become more receptive to God's guidance when I have a name for it.
Really good.
So I am really excited to dive in and talk about a bunch of things that we learned from Meg, but especially some of those very specific terms that she taught us and left both of us with our jaws on the ground.
She gave us some genius terms.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, the podcast that equips you to lose who you're not, love who you are, and live your one life well.
Today, we're processing what we learned from Meg Epperson, author of Sky Full of Stars, Learning to Surrender to God's Perfect Plans.
Meg Epperson grew up having a relationship with Jesus, and she always trusted God. But it wasn't until her daughter Avery, a miracle in so many ways, was born with a litany of life-threatening birth defects that she began to fully understand what it means to trust Jesus with everything.
In this heartbreakingly beautiful memoir, you'll learn how a mother fought for her child, her family, and even herself as she grappled with the weight of failure, of letting down everyone around her and feeling let down by God.
But in the midst of the fight, through heavy grief, she not only discovered her own voice, she discovered that God is both good and faithful.
If you've ever experienced grief, suffering, or pain,
if God has ever asked you to surrender more than you thought possible,
if you've ever questioned how God is at work in the darkness,
Sky Full of Stars is for you. This book will show you that when everything around you is dark, peace can be found in the suffering. You'll discover new ways to rely on God's trustworthiness.
Okay, Sherry, this week we have a challenging knot. So I'm going to let you lead with that.
Why, thank you. So very kind of you. Yeah, it is challenging. Oh, and I'm the first one to talk about it. So here's our lose who you're not. You're not a victim of your suffering. And, you know, the line from Meg that just keeps replaying through my head, when we asked her about, you know, how she came to write her book, one of the things she said is, I felt the story was just too magnificent to keep to myself. And Amy, when I think about the aspects of my life that involve a story of suffering, magnificent is not the word that comes to my mind.
That's the thing. That's what I think is so challenging about that. You're not a victim of your suffering, because man, when I'm in the middle of suffering, I feel like a victim.
Oh, absolutely.
And so for Meg to say that is so counterintuitive and countercultural.
Yes.
You know, that, yeah.
Whew. My first response, okay, I'm going to whisper this because I don't really want anybody to hear it.
Okay.
So listeners, plug your ears. Okay. My first response was I envied her.
Oh, do tell.
Like I admired, totally admired that, but I was like, I envied her ability to put it that way. You know, I've been re-listening to a book that we've both enjoyed, Maybe You Should Talk to Someone.
Amazing book.
I mean, I knew the plot, but it's almost like I had never read it before, or I was absorbing it in a very deep way. And the author made the comment that regret can fuel either bitterness or change. And I've experienced it both way. And let's just say I claim to prefer change. That's what I say with my mouth. But sometimes my behaviors make it clear to me and probably everybody around me that there's something about wallowing in the bitterness. I don't know what it is, but sometimes it does just seem easier to cling to the bitterness. And so it was important. It was beautiful. It was admirable. And it was, I'll be the one to say for myself, it was challenging. She kicked my tushy, as you would say, mm-hmm. with that idea that the story was too magnificent to keep to herself. And clearly she's not a victim of the suffering she's been through. So what is your take on you're not a victim of your suffering?
Well, I was reflecting on this word suffering, and I certainly have gone through some hard things in my life. And we're going to talk about comparing in a minute, but I don't know that I have ever feel like I've gone through something that has been true, deep suffering. Some hard things, some heartbreak for sure. But one of the times that I have learned from someone who is suffering mm-hmm. was a journey that I went on with my friend Linda, mm. who Linda and I met. I keep track of how long ago it was because she had just had her second baby when I met her, mm. and her son is the same age as Nolan.
Gotcha.
So it was 23 years ago when I met Linda, and it was 20 years ago when Linda died of breast cancer. She was diagnosed during her second pregnancy.
Wow.
And I watched Linda turn suffering into grace.
Mm.
Those are the only words I can put around it. And I heard the same thing in Meg.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's intentional.
Mm.
Bitterness is so much easier in the short term. It's bad for us in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
But in the short term, it's easier because it takes intentionality. Mm. It takes a reset, as you say, a mindset reset.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a reframing of things. And all of that takes energy and thought and intention. But one of the things that I just admired so much about Linda and watching her suffer to the end of her life, she was a theologian, and she taught me two things. She said over and over again to me, she said, "Amy, God is good no matter what happens to me."
Mm.
And gosh, it was 20 years ago and I'm still tearing up.
Mm.
It's hard to lose a friend.
Yeah, of course.
But the closer it got to the end of her life, the more often and the louder she said it. And the second thing is she said, "God will use my life to his glory till my very last breath." And, you know, that was hard because she really was suffering physically at the end of her life. So much pain. And I was praying for her to die because I knew she'd go to heaven and there would be an end to that pain and peace. But I kept remembering what she said. And I just tried to really dig into trusting that every breath that she took mattered and was for his glory. And so because Meg and because Linda lived what they believed, they lived their theology, they're not victims.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they are leading us. You know, even though Linda is gone, she is still leading me. Meg led us to a different place in her interview.
So true and so powerful. So let's shift from lose who you're not. And I'm just going to say this again, not for the people in the back. I'm going to say this again to myself and anybody else who wants to listen in can listen in this time. It's not a secret. You're not a victim of your suffering. And so moving into our love who you are statements. Okay, so mine is going to be part of my process of moving out of the bitterness here. You are seen by God, period.
Mm.
I almost said you are seen by God even in your suffering. And I thought, I just want that to be a 5-word sentence. You are seen by God, period. And, you know, another thing Meg said that just stuck out at me, she said, "There is a way of knowing Jesus in the valley that you cannot find any other place." And I know this from personal experience. I know this from seeing other people like you with your friend Linda. And about a week ago, I was leading the Sensitive and Strong Facebook group members through a time we call it Morning Truth for Tender Hearts. And we spend about 20 to 30 minutes just really immersing. We do a practice of Lectio Divina where we read through the same passage 3 times. I read it, and then there's a series of question prompts to reflect on. And it's just a lovely, quiet time. And the passage that we focused on was just a portion of the story of Hagar, which is not a fun, easy, like I told them, I said, I always skipped this one when I was teaching my children. Like, I didn't like this story for a variety of reasons. But as we just really immersed and then just paused and took the time to just really listen to God speak to our hearts, the phrase that really jumped out at me was when the angel says to Hagar, "The Lord has heard of your misery." And there was something about that word misery. Now, let me be clear. I didn't go and do a word study, so I don't know exactly what that word means in the original language. I'll just tell you what spoke to my heart. And that was that the angel identified Hagar's true emotion. There was no dismissiveness in that. And it just really was so, I'm going to say comforting, but I mean in the sense of strengthening to me, because right now I'm in a season of just really feeling all of the losses of 2020 in very vivid ways. And sometimes I feel like I'm the only person in my life who is experiencing the lament. I've got people around me who keep telling me about what they're leaning into that makes them strong and makes them able to be more positive. And I believe them. Like, the things they're leaning into are good, and I know that they work. I'm not questioning them at all. It's just every time they start talking to me about that, then I feel pressured to come up with something so that I sound equally positive. Like, I'm going into that comparison trap. But the truth is, right now, I'm at a place where lament feels like the right place to be. And so hearing that word misery, the Lord has heard of your misery, it just gave me the sense that it's okay to feel a deep sense of loss with God, and that God sent his angel to send that message, that he knew what she was truly experiencing. There was no sense of what she should have been doing instead. It was, I see you right where you are. I can name it. I can give it the same name that you would give it. And it just really evoked in me that longing to be seen for where I'm actually at, not where others want me to be, wish me to be, expect me to be, need me to be. And so what I took away from all that was permission to be where I'm at with God, for him to see me where I actually am. And it was just really powerful, and it has remained powerful. The idea that honest misery is okay with God is a gift. So for me, love who you are seen by God right where you're at.
That is a Selah moment, girl. That's really powerful stuff. So my love who you are is from something that Meg said. She said, there's an element of advocacy that always makes its way into a trial. And so my love who you are is, you are an advocate for your life circumstances, or maybe in your life circumstances. You know, I love this idea of advocacy. And I think I responded to this so much because my little shift in, or actually my big shift in ministry towards racial reconciliation, I have felt that I'm not an activist, but I am an advocate. And I thought about some other areas in my life that I have advocated for. And one of them, one of my sons has spoken publicly about his struggle with pornography. And so he's allowed me to talk about that some too. And I tell you, because so I'm an advocate for moms with boys who have struggled or are struggling with pornography. And that has been very, very powerful. And inevitably, when I bring that up, like at a speaking event or in a personal conversation, there is this Me Too moment where, because almost no boys don't struggle with pornography now, you know, because of the advent of the internet. So that's a place where I have been able to be an advocate because of the circumstances I was in and what God has taught me in them. And this is, again, another shift from victim to advocate. So, so instead of becoming just this victim that you have no control, no power over your own story, I think that stepping into advocacy, just the way Meg has for her daughter in her illness and with the doctors and all that she described, that gives you a sense of power over your story. Mm-hmm. And instead of just letting things happen to you, you are using that story to, I think it's in 1 Corinthians, it says, comfort those with the comfort mm-hmm. with which you've been comforted, right? Mm-hmm. The whatever God's given to you, you pass it on to someone else. And it's part of taking the power back in your life.
I remember when she said that and you responded to it. I was looking forward to this mm-hmm. moment when you would unpack it for all of us. So wonderful. All right. Well, there's something else I want you to unpack for us, and this will lead us into talking about how to live your one life well. And when Meg talked about comparative suffering, you and I both kind of lit up. And then she talked about autonomous grieving, and you reacted to that. Why did that hit you so much?
Well, I think that the autonomous grieving, it's so good. I mean, we're word girls, and to have words to wrap around things. But I had some small issues, and I'm putting that in quotation marks with my fingers, that were looming really large to me. Mm-hmm. And even as Meg had been talking, I was like, well, those are really nothing compared mm-hmm. to what Meg is going through. But I think that we have to allow ourselves to grieve. And this has been a theme during COVID, mm-hmm. I think, and is that people are grieving. Mm-hmm. So I think when we think of grieving as autonomous, grieving is very personal. Mm-hmm. We don't have to compare it to anybody else. We don't have to be on anybody else's timeline, but we have to grieve. Mm-hmm. To be able to deal with it and move on.
That's helpful. So I'm going to move on to just a couple questions we can ask ourselves. And I think these questions will help us to help all of us to live your one life well. And then you're going to give us a couple of actions. So my first question is, in the midst of suffering, am I measuring up or am I pouring out? And so when Meg referred to comparative grief, it made me think of our recent interview with Shannon. And how crazy is it that we compare even in loss, and that we're playing that measure up game, which isn't a game. It's obviously a strategy of the enemy to cause us in the midst of our pain to be comparing whose pain is bigger or smaller or more valid or less valid or should be going on how long or how short. And so instead of trying to figure out whether my grief is greater or more valid or anything else that involves measuring lines, to be asking, am I pouring out? Am I pouring my heart out to God in lament? That's the first kind of pouring out. Am I pouring my heart out to God in lament? I get in trouble when I want to go to a human and I want them to make me feel better, because generally all I do is dump on them and I might feel better for a moment because it's a little cathartic, and then I go find another human. So pouring out, am I pouring my heart out to God? And am I pouring out love and compassion to those who need it? Our mutual friend, Sherry Fletcher, last week, she sent me a photo of a dog leash and dog collar on her passenger car seat. Mm. And my first response was to just choke up and tear up, because I've been there before. And I thought, oh, I'll wait until I feel a little bit better and then I'll drop her an email. And I realized, no, the way I can best pour out love and compassion right now. And I just got on Voxer and I left her a voice of Vox that was choked up and teary, just to let her know with my voice, with tears in it, that I know what that feels like. I know how hard it is. And, you know, I just encouraged her to, you know, take care of herself that day, to reach out to me if she wanted to talk or even just cry. And in the past, I would have been like, oh, that's too hard. That's too much emotion. That's too big. Or I don't want to intrude. I don't want to intrude on her life on such a hard day. I'll just send her emojis, you know, whatever. Pouring out our heart to God in whatever we need. In my case, it was lament, and then pouring out love and compassion to those who need it. In this case, action, Amy. I didn't just ask the question. I actually took action. It's just occurring to me. Whoa, you're ripping off on me here.
So awesome. Well, and I just thought that this whole idea of pouring out in grief, there's this aspect of entering in, which is the action also.
Yeah, I love that. So that the first question, which has now become several questions. The first one, in the midst of suffering, am I measuring up or am I pouring out? And then under pouring out, it's pouring out our heart to God and pouring out love and compassion to those who need it. And then the second question is, in the midst of suffering, am I engaging in self-betrayal or self-sacrifice? And girl, that hit me like the proverbial ton of bricks, because betrayal is being like Judas. Sacrifice is being like Jesus. And whoa, I mean, it's just a whole new way of looking at people pleasing. So self-betrayal, those behaviors of trying to keep the peace, which is basically being a peace faker rather than a peacemaker and allowing unsafe behaviors, versus self-sacrifice, which she said had to do with relinquishing my preference for comfort and actually speaking the truth. So whoa, that's challenging. In the midst of suffering, am I engaging in self-betrayal or true Christ-like self-sacrifice? So talk to us about what actions to take.
All right. So the first action is to acknowledge your own suffering today. You don't have to compare it to anybody else. You don't have to decide whether it's been too long that you've been suffering, but just to take a moment to acknowledge your own suffering today. And like you said, to be Hagar, to take it to God, to pour it out, to lament it. We have to acknowledge our suffering and grieve our suffering. That this is the way. I said move on in just a minute ago, and I want to amend that, because I think moving on makes it seem like it's just over. But let's say move forward. And that means that the sadness is still there, but we are moving forward. And then number two is acknowledge someone else's suffering today. You know, what you just said about your interaction with Sherry Fletcher was so powerful, because I think a lot of times we don't want to acknowledge someone else's suffering because it's too messy for us. We can't figure out what to say. We can't figure out how to say it. And so we ignore it, which is hurtful in and of itself. And so we recognize where we've glossed over someone else's suffering, and we talk about it, and then don't just think about it, but actually reach out to that person that's suffering. Do something kind for them, just along the lines that you did for our friend Sherry Fletcher. You know, leave a voice message, take dinner, do whatever. I liked some of the practical ideas that Meg had. Do something to give them time and space in the season that they're in.
So good. All right. What is the scripture that we're wrapping around these two episodes?
Isaiah 48:10 says, "See, I have refined you, though not as silver. I have tested you in the furnace of affliction." Oh, the grit, the grit is receiving that, you know, in saying that I haven't suffered. And then we're talking and I was like, yeah, I have. I just am comparing, you know, and the grit is acknowledging my own suffering, calling it what it is, and grieving over it. I'm an avoider. I'm a stuffer. And so the grit is just facing it. You know, I say I didn't suffer, in the next sentence, I'm crying over the death of my friend 20 years ago. That was a season of real suffering for me. Yeah,
absolutely.
Silly me.
I'm just gonna breathe and enjoy the fact that you are giving yourself grace even as you talk about grit here. Oh my goodness. You know, and then the grace I'll pull from what you just said in terms of recognizing when I've glossed over somebody else's suffering, you know, my instinct is to beat myself up for being the worst friend ever, or the worst daughter or worst sister or whatever else it might be. And so to give myself grace, obviously at the time I did the absolute best I could, even though it was probably, you know, it may have been really lousy. It was still the best I could at the time. And then to know that in my healthiest relationships, if I'm trying, they're going to give me grace and they're going to even be able to give me some guidance along the way. I don't have to get it completely right. Like it was so freeing to pick up my cell phone and go, should I Voxer or shouldn't I? Yeah, because she's the kind of friend who will receive what I give, and she'll be like Meg. Remember when Meg said something about, even if what they say isn't what she needs to hear, she'll still receive it as love because she knows it was intended in love. And you and I both went, how'd she get so wise?
Yeah, that was amazing to me, because after my friend Linda died, watching what happened and what was said to her husband, Don, was like, there were times when I wanted to punch people in the face for him. Can I just say that? But he was like Meg, is he just received it as love and moved on, much healthier than punching people in the face.
We hope you've enjoyed episode 206 of Grit and Grace, the podcast.
Listeners, we're so grateful that you join us each and every week.
And we're so grateful to Salem Books for their sponsorship of this week's episode.
Check out the webpage at gritandgracethepodcast.com/episode206. There you'll find this week's transcript, a link to order Sky Full of Stars, Learning to Surrender to God's Perfect Plans, and a link to Meg's website where you can read more about her journey.
Join us next week when we'll be talking with Cheryl Bridges Johns, author of 7 Transformative Gifts of Menopause, An Unexpected Spiritual Journey.
For today, grow your grit.
Embrace God's grace.
And as God reveals the next step to live your one life well,
we'll be cheering you on. So take it.
Much healthier than punching people in the face.
I think that's the end of the podcast.
Such a great way to end a holy moment.
Yeah, well, you can't force me to say anything else because I just love it too much. All our listeners, except the ones who unsubscribe, which is perfectly fine. Bye-bye. 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 Oh, my cheeks hurt. All right, that was fun. Well, I mean, that little part was fun. Talking about suffering isn't fun.
Yeah.